Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Thursday, March 31st, 2022. I'm Ash Bennington, joined today by Bart Melick, Global Head of Commodity Market Strategies at TD Securities. Welcome, Bart. Let's take a real quick look at what's happening right now in markets. Obviously, last day of the fiscal quarter, first losing quarter since the pandemic. Let's take a look because it's been a down day in general. Dow Jones Industrial Average off about 1.56%. Final print here on the day looks like 34,677. S&P 500 also off on the day, exact same percentage, 1.56, closing out the day at 4,350. NASDAQ off 1.54. So markets basically moving in lockstep here, closing out the day, final print on NASDAQ, 14,220. Lots to talk about, lots of stories happening in the energy sector. Bart, welcome to Real Vision Daily Briefing. Your first time on the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Bart, lots of news happening right now in energy markets. U.S. releasing 1 million barrels from the strategic reserve. Oil prices moving around a bit. Big picture, Bart, where are we right now?
Well, look, we had a bit of a correction today, some 6% or so. And that's on the news, I think, in part because we're seeing the U.S. government releasing that 1 million barrels that you mentioned. We're also thinking that perhaps OPEC will continue to increase supply by some 400,000 barrels. You know, this is what they're saying. We'll see for sure what is happening tomorrow. Ultimately, I think the reserve release is probably not enough. That strategic reserve will get quite lean as we move into the second half of 2022. And I'm certainly making the assumption that the sanctions on Russian supply will continue. We, of course, have no idea what is happening on the negotiation side, aside from what is reported in the media. But chances are that these sanctions are going to be here for a while. And of course, Russia exports roughly 5 million barrels equivalent a day of supply. When you account for that shortfall, there are very few opportunities, at least in the interim, that I see that can replace that crude. Yes, the U.S. government has dipped into its reserves, and that's going to certainly help some. But if we do see even stricter sanctions and oil will not make its way into the refineries as it did, just a few months ago, then moving past third quarter and into fourth quarter, if demand continues to run at the current rate of about 2 million barrels a day, we will see a tight market. And I think we will continue to see risk being priced in. And we certainly expect for the next quarter or two to have crude trading above $100. Beyond that, things should improve as capital flows into supply formation. But still, probably it's going to take a while to compensate or refill all those inventories we're going to bleed.
Yeah. Well, that's very well framed in terms of the big picture of what's happening here. You touched on price. Let's run through those numbers real quick. So oil, WTI, this is May 22 contract, CL1 on the New York Merc, trading at $100 spot 73 cents right now. So hovering right around the $100 a barrel level on WTI. That's off about 6.6% on the day. Coming over to ICE Brent crude May 22 contracts on the Intercontinental Exchange in Europe. This is LCO1 trading right now at 107 spot 29. This, of course, is the global price of oil, off on the day 5.4%. So a little bit more movement, perhaps as one might expect from a U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve release on the WTI number, the number that's benchmarked for U.S. Oil prices. You know, it's curious, you talk about this big picture, the framework for the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve release. In the past, historically, I remember dating back, whatever it is, some number of months, when the U.S. released petroleum from the reserve, there was this paradoxical impact where price went up rather than down, markets somewhat balking. You know, this really brings up the point that you framed so eloquently, which is this question of how much of an impact does the Strategic Petroleum Reserve really make when there are released? I mean, this looks like kind of an eyedropper in a bathtub, doesn't it?
Well, maybe not exactly an eyedropper, but U.S. consumes some 20 million barrels a day, you know, give or take. There's some seasonal variability. 1 million barrels of additional supply is material because, you know, after all commodities and assets tend to trade on the margin. And if this market was short 750,000 barrels a day, this would be material and would have a very large adjustment than a sustainable one. However, we're talking a potentially significantly bigger deficits going forward. And much will depend on how the politics unfolds here, you know, how quickly Russia is going to be able to move crude destined for European markets into the Asian markets. You know, we don't think that's going to be as quick or as robust as people think. You've got a lot of geography and a lot of infrastructure that will need to be constructed for, you know, those flows to be redirected, as I think some are expecting. So this is a long-term project. I think for the next 3 to 6 to 9 months, it is going to be very tough to increase supply materially from both sides. On the demand side, oil is price inelastic. You know, once you have a vehicle that consumes X amount, you're probably not getting a new one, you know, anytime soon. So you're just going to, you know, you have to use it. You're not going to ship to transit quickly. That might not exist. And on the supply side, it takes a while to build new capacity. So we're kind of stuck. And if Russian oil doesn't come back, which it is unlikely to, this market is going to be fairly tight.
Yeah. So maybe it's like a pint glass in a bathtub.
Yes, maybe. Maybe that's probably more accurate.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So you talk about this sort of the structural picture for oil. You mentioned the inelasticities on the supply side, on the demand side. What do you look at to understand where these prices are moving, where demand and supply are, other than obviously just the price of front month contracts?
Well, we certainly look at the aggregate global economic picture, you know, where U.S. economy is moving. And very importantly, we look at Asia and we look at China. And, you know, part of the reprieve that we're seeing in oil today, of course, you know, the SPR announcement and the OPEC announcement are, of course, important. But on the demand side, let's remember, Shanghai is in lockdown. And, you know, that is probably as much as 1 million barrels a day of demand, which is going to come back, which, you know, as we move past the pandemic crisis in China, that is going to very much negate what the Biden administration has done with the SPR. And I think that's very key to remember. We've already seen pretty significant downgrades of demand, but I'm not so sure we're going to continue to, you know, have demand destruction anytime soon. So we're going to see demand, you know, continue firm by historical standards, and supply, as I said before, having a difficult time increasing. And, you know, even more, as importantly, inventory levels will be whittled down. Now, certainly the OECD inventory levels are as low as they were in 2008, 2014, where crude was over $100. And if, you know, Russian crude doesn't come back, and, you know, which we think it doesn't in any meaningful way, then those inventories get lowered. And typically speaking, as inventories relative to total demand decline, that means volatility rises and upside risk increases. So any negative news, anything, you know, traders might see across their screen that points to some sort of supply risk could have the potential to spiking crude again. That's what we look at, one. And, of course, we also look at what algos are doing. We very daily close CTA. We have an algorithm that tracks what these folks do and tries to predict where they're going. And, of course, we look at technical signals as well.
Yeah. You mentioned the global demand picture, GDP growth. What's your baseline outlook for where we are right now on a global basis for GDP growth for 2022?
Well, I think GDP growth is probably consistent with 2.2 million barrels of demand growth for 2022, which is a very robust number. That's been downgraded from around 3 million before the Russian development. And that's taking into account that, you know, Russian economy is going to tank. Probably European economy is not going to perform anywhere near as strongly as it was prior to this conflict. And certainly we're going to see an impact in America as well, where there will be, you know, I think a material impact on consumer spending broadly, because the money that you are going to spend on discretionary goods, on travel services and things of that nature, now you're going to have to plunk down and put it in your tank and spend at the grocery store as well. And that's, you know, the other aspect of energy prices, food prices, fertilizer, which is a key element in food production, have all spiked as well because of this Russia conflict. And of course, big input for nitrogen fertilizer, urea, is natural gas. And, you know, much of this is produced in Europe, and those prices have spiked. So this has ripple effects through the entire economy here.
Are we still seeing snapback effects from the reopening trade, or is this moving into a new phase in your view as you do this estimation and analysis for energy consumption?
I think we're pretty much, you know, priced things in at this point. It's been long enough, I suspect.
Yeah. So you mentioned a lot of other points. I know you cover commodities more broadly. Talk to us a little bit on where you are, like, for example, with base metals, which also have obviously significant tie-ins to aggregate global GDP.
Sure. Base metals typically should be slowing down quite significantly in this portion of the cycle. They are now. You know, we're seeing the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world, you know, voicing a much more hawkish narrative. So we are at the start of a tightening cycle, and, you know, who knows how much this is going to be. Probably, you know, true to what the Fed dots have said, other central banks as well. And China has slowed down as well because of the pandemic. And we're seeing all sorts of supply chain issues and logistic issues around the world. But commodity prices on the base metal side have done very, very well, much better than I think many have expected. And those are negative supply shocks here. For example, the sky-high energy prices in Europe and in China, you know, last year basically meant that energy had to be redirected to consumers and other industries and away from smelting. The pandemic has prevented mining activity. So there have been pretty significant impacts all over the base metal space. In aluminum, it's a very energy intensive metal. And we see that as in a very sharp, very deep deficit this year, and it's been trading much, much higher than we have expected. Same with nickel. Let's add another element to it. Russia is a big exporter of aluminum and nickel.
Yeah.
So the base metal, we do think, move off the highs, but we're not going to see a correction as deep as we would normally expect when the cycle is tightening on the monetary side and economic growth is moderating.
Yeah, Bart, now that you mention it, not to turn too fine a point on it, but what the hell is happening in the nickel market?
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that with any level of confidence.
I'm not sure anybody can.
We've had interruption of trading. We had in other words, we call it force majeure, where trades were invalidated. And I think that's as much as I want to say about that, because I frankly don't want to delve into exactly what happened and what triggered, because it would be just speculation on my part.
I'm going to have to buy you a pint the next time you're in town and get the off-the-record answer to that, because I'm sure you have thoughts. It's just been such a surreal sort of dislocated market to watch. And I think that there are, as you suggest, just an incredible number of open questions about what's happening there.
Yeah, I can say one thing. I think for many participants in the market, it is disturbing. Or at least a bit of alarm has to be sounded among credit people and risk management folks when these type of things happen. Because if this happens, whether valid or not, the questions are going to arise: what other markets can be interrupted in this way? Yes, some markets are more liquid than others, and there are a lot of reasons to say why one particular market had this done with it. But I think it raises the risk profile broadly for all markets. And I think makes us think that prudence is probably order of the day from in these days if things like that are happening.
Yeah, very well said. Talking of base metals, moving on from base metals to precious metals, gold right now trading at $1,937 an ounce. What are your thoughts on the gold market? It's obviously been an interesting few weeks there.
We've been quite out of consensus on gold for a while. We've been positive. And the main reason here is this. We ultimately think that the Federal Reserve is continuing to be behind the curve here. And they will probably continue to be so for at least the next 3 to 6 months. Why? Well, we've got inflation, around 8% or so. We have grain prices skyrocketing. We have fertilizer prices skyrocketing. 61% of the CPI components out of the 200 are 5% plus year on year. Even higher proportion at 2% plus. So this is an aggregate inflation problem. And even if you believe that the Fed will do exactly what its dots are implying, in real terms, the Fed funds is still quite negative, and it will continue to be so. I don't know where the neutral rate or the terminal rate should be, but I'm pretty sure it's not 2.5. It's probably higher. And I think, at this point, central banks...
This is the, by the way, for folks who may not know, this is the rate that you're talking about where effectively it is neither inflationary nor deflationary, the natural neutral policy rate, sometimes called R-star by economists, this idea of the rate at which basically things are flat.
Yes. So the question is, when inflation is in the aggregates, Milton Friedman and folks who are predisposed that way will say it's really a monetary phenomenon. And I think it negates the argument that this is very much a phenomenon that has a lot of transitory properties. And what does that mean, in normal person talk? It means that it may not come down as quickly as people think, particularly since food is 20% of the index, and food is probably going to be, quite high in that to inflation. I know that's not policy related quite often because we're looking at core PCE, but that does, your normal American household cares about food and fuel because people eat and they have to drive. So it is material, and that's what drives wage demands and other things and government budgets for social programs and so on. So we like gold mainly because we think the Fed will remain behind the curve. Ultimately, we do believe that the Fed will discover religion, if you like. Essentially, once they decide that the negatives, particularly for the lower end of the income distribution, are more, you know, inflation impact is more negative than a slower economy, then I think they get more aggressive. But we could certainly see more heroic action from the Fed, maybe, you know, a couple of 50s, and see where it takes us and where the rudder takes us. But it's going to be tough to get restrictive quickly. You know, they certainly don't want to be too restrictive too quick. I think they're going to play it by ear. They do know about the elasticities of all this. And only real solution is to slow the economy down. And I think they're going to try to do the best for Americans they can. Meanwhile, you know, slow things down just enough so they can control inflation, but not so much that it affects negatively your average household.
Yeah, by the way, PCE, personal consumption expenditures, this is the measure preferred by the Fed, core meaning ex food and energy, right now at 5.4% from a percent change from 1 month a year earlier. This is February 2022 number. By the way, this has lagged pretty dramatically, CPI, which is at 7.9%, and PPI, FD, the final demand for producer price index, now in the double digits.
Yeah, you know, certainly I think there is, you know, good probability that we'll see that higher. The Fed, I think, in the last FOMC is talking about a 4.6% target for that metric this year. You know, we'll see. They have a two handle for that inflation measure next year. Well, we will see. And the year after that, you know, they're very close to target of 2%. And again, we'll see. I would bet that inflation may be with us at higher levels for longer. And that's not a bad story for gold. But once we start getting restrictive and the market is convinced that the Federal Reserve will sort of pull a Volcker on us here, that gold will move lower. We don't expect a rout because we don't think they're as committed as Mr. Volcker would be. And I don't think we're quite there yet. But ultimately, in order to control inflation, rates have to rise, and they probably have to rise a little bit more than the market is pricing. And a slow start is good for gold. As this accelerates, it'll probably mean a correction from the highs. But we could still get 2,000 plus over the next 3 months or so.
Hey, by the way, do you guys over at TD Securities have a price target on gold right now?
We do, actually. We, you know, I forecast quarterly averages. I think 1975, 1950 for this quarter, and moving it down as the year ends.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
By the way, for those of you just joining us, we've been talking, not surprisingly, about oil and now about inflation. Talking of which, I just wanted to cut very quickly to a clip. Surging oil and inflation may outlast the war. This comes to us from Tracy Shuchart, hosted by Michael Nicoletos on Real Vision on every tier, Essential, Plus, and Pro. Let's take a look at that clip right now.
So obviously, we have initiated sanctions on Russia, although technically speaking, there are no real energy sanctions yet. There are some bank sanctions, but there's no real sanctions against energy. The problem is now we're seeing a bunch of self-sanctioning where banks don't want to give guarantees. Ships can't get insurance. So we're seeing about 1.5 million barrels taken off the market so far in crude oil and about a million barrels in product right now. That said, many of the orders for March were already ordered before the invasion. So really, we're going to have to look to April and May to see really how many barrels are being taken off the market. And so, of course, that's keeping up floor under oil at this point. And then we also have a bunch of other geopolitical issues going on right now with drone attacks and ballistic missiles from the Houthis in Saudi Arabia right now. And then looking at Libya, Libya can't get financing right now. So the world is a little tenuous right now as far as the crude oil markets are concerned.
So Tracy Shukar talking oil, geopolitics, and sanctions. Bart, generally speaking, big picture, what's your view on the current geopolitical situation and on the sanction potential for escalating?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, we can say it's a big, big mess. Horrible things are happening in Ukraine and to the Ukrainian people.
Yes.
Ultimately, for what it's worth, it's probably the only thing we can do is apply sanctions against Russia and so far their banking sector. Do I think that this is going to escalate some more? I think for the time being, we're probably not going to directly hit the oil and the natural gas sector because the dislocation fear is probably too great for the European consumers who are, you know, hopelessly dependent on those energy sources from Russia. But I think the screws can tighten with more Russian institutions, financial institutions being squeezed on the SWIFT and hitting particular individuals and potentially selective energy supplies here. But of course, my hope is that this gets settled and there is a full with withdrawal. And ultimately, I suspect these sanctions are going to stay around for a long time, because if they don't, then the regime in Moscow would be seen as to be rewarded by this action. And of course, probably not what political powers in the Western world want to see.
Yeah. I wanted to jump over and take some questions because they're coming in fast and thick. I know this is your first time on the show. We get fantastic questions from our viewers. This one comes to us from Slunky on YouTube. And the question is, boy, this is a great question and one that I've been wondering myself. It's in two parts. First, how might a ceasefire affect oil market volatility? And would you expect a swift recovery to similar $100 levels considering supply side fundamentals? Great question from Slunky.
Well, we've already seen this, before I went on holidays a couple of weeks ago, I guess now, we've seen talk of, some sort of detente and, negotiations. And the result there was that the risk premium on crude was taken off. So, yes, if we see some promising discussions between Ukraine and Russia about a ceasefire and potential withdrawal, that I think would easily take $5 to $10 off the price. I don't think that would probably be enough, given the fact that we believe that sanctions will stay here. I think a portion of that would return. And indeed, this is what we're kind of projecting for the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah. Talking of detente, here's a question that comes to us from Johnny K from the Real Vision site. Johnny wants an update on the Iran nuclear deal. How do you think about the Iran nuclear deal? What's its significance and how does it impact markets globally?
Well, my understanding is that the Iran deal, which is ironically negotiated by Russia, I don't know how things like that, it's above my pay grade to comment on the politics here, but the oil sector, at least initially, would not benefit a huge amount. Maybe Iran has some 200 to 250,000 barrels of capacity that it can deploy globally, another million and a half within a year or so. There's some inventories that they've been accumulating they can put in. I think there would be an impact, but probably not a huge one in the short run. And that gets us back to the bit about elasticities. It takes a while. Miraculously, logistics and tankers and transportation routes aren't going to materialize. And it's still not all that certain that bankers want to finance any of that material for now anyway. So it's going to take a while to bring it to full fruition here. But yeah, over you know, 6 to 9 months to a year, we could see another million barrels from Iran, getting us close to what their levels prior to the sanctions were. I have no superior knowledge of what is being negotiated. It's just my understanding that they're close, and that's as much as I can tell. And if that deal happens, then those are the implications on the supply side, I think.
By the way, that million barrel, the basis for that statement is barrels per day.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question that comes to us from Ralph Humphrey from the Real Vision website. Does Bart have any views on coffee, soybeans, wheat, cocoa, any of the soft commodities? You mentioned food a bit earlier. What's your thinking about that space?
You know, my only expertise is as a consumer when I overpay for expensive lattes. It's something I can't really comment on.
Well, we're all in that position right now of overpaying for just about everything. It feels like food prices are something that, you don't have to be watching financial markets very closely to see that the price of a sandwich is going up. It's pretty dramatic.
Yes, I think, you know, you're seeing the same thing in the supermarket as well. But it does make sense. Food prices tend to lag fertilizer prices and energy prices. And when we plant our grain, in the spring now, farmers will be faced with much, much higher potash prices, nitrogen prices, phosphates, and other fertilizers, and fuel to plow the land, to transport the final product and inputs around. We're going to see that. Probably it means also that some farmers are likely to plant less or different crops because they're not going to be as fertilizer intensive. And that means we could see lower yields per acre. And that means, you know, on the margin, less food supply and higher prices. And there are scarcities, particularly poorer parts of the world and poorer parts of the U.S. public and, you know, just people generally will have a food security problem, I think. And that is a very, very unfortunate side effect of this. So it's a lot more than just academics and traders talking about markets. This has a real impact on real people and what they pay for food and how much and the quality of food they consume.
Yeah, extremely well said, particularly for someone who doesn't follow the soft commodities closely. That's a pretty sobering thought.
Yes, and we're going to see that. And this will, in the end, impact how much the public spends on other goods. And certainly it remains a very good possibility that this means that economic growth will be slower than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah. Bart, fantastic conversation. We're going to have you back on Real Vision Daily Briefing. I really enjoyed this. As we come to the conclusion of this conversation, final thoughts, key takeaways that you'd like to leave our viewers with?
I think the key takeaway here is look very carefully at the Federal Reserve, what is happening in Ukraine, and follow the economy. And I think if one looks at the broader market and is well informed, they can one can probably react well. That's the end of my wisdom here.
Well, very well said and very well framed. Bart, I hope we can do this again soon. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much.
And thanks again for watching the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Maggie Lake will be back tomorrow with, you guessed it, Ral Pal. Thanks again for watching.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.